With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight. It's time for the publisher fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new Ingram power.
Hi, how's it going, and welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week. We will soon be retiring our video ad news brand for good. In early January, we'll be launching the new Video Week site, which we're very excited about. My guest this week is Austin Scott, who heads up the video market development strategy for EMEA at Xandr. She's something of a video veteran. She's worked at various video ad tech roles for quite some time now, and is somebody I always look forward to meeting at events. She's always got the lowdown and the latest gossip on what's happening, and has an excellent understanding of the market. A little bit of housekeeping from us. We have NVF Roadmap coming up on January 21st. We've got some fantastic speakers lined up. You can check out the website and book yourself a free ticket. Places will be limited, so best to book as soon as you can. You can go to newvideofrontiers.com. And yeah, we hope to see you there. We're going to be kicking off the year by looking at what's ahead in the year for CTV advertising. Now I'll cross over to my chat with Austin. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so Austin, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
You're welcoming me as well. That's a first. That's nice. you recently took part in our Pathways to Programmatic panel at New Video Frontiers. And one of the points that you raised, which I found extremely interesting, was the myth of convergence. And it's something that made immediate sense to me when you understand the mechanics of the industry. But, you know, could you explain a little bit what you mean about that? We've been talking about convergence for so many years. But what are you talking about when you say the myth of convergence?
Well, I think the myth of convergence is, if you are taking it from a certain perspective, it becomes a little unclear if we're all meaning the same type of convergence and what we can achieve as an industry together around convergence. Probably the most natural version is, say, the user experience, the viewer experience feels converged when I log into an app on my phone. I can continue the same show on my smart TV. So there's that element of sort of the audiences are being converged in having these opportunities to experience between different platforms. But say the advertiser's experience of, you know, having a converged view and buying that viewer across multiple different inventory sources is just, it's not there yet. And I think that the buyer needing to understand reach and frequency and outcomes as best they can, there isn't really there's some convergence amongst different buckets of inventory. And I think that there's a lot of advancements I think publishers and media owners can have for themselves in trying to get a converged view. But we're definitely working a lot on, you know, planning tools and stuff that can help have a unified view for a media owner. But yeah, it's just, I guess I just say myth of convergence in that the programmatic space has a tendency to have very flashy words and kind of rallying cries, but I think we also have to kind of couple that with the context that it's in, the, you know, industry needs, regulations, and kind of the players that are necessary to make what would be in a pure form, the concept of convergence, actionable.
Yeah, I think that was one of the early promises of programmatic, was that you would sit on, you know, your DSP, you would be able to buy any inventory at impression level within an auction, And you would be able to, like, say, frequency cap, manage your spend across all these different publishers, that, you know, it would be highly efficient for the advertiser, and the publishers would end up getting more revenue as advertising became more effective. And it hasn't really worked out that way. So what's the underlying causes of that? Is it the fixation? Is it essentially a sell side issue in that it's the walled gardens, or what's causing the fragmentation?
So the moniker of right time, right ad, right place, that in some ways, I think people were able to be satisfied with the level that they were able to achieve that. I guess part of it is, like, in our everyday lives, we don't even get this, like, I can't just do whatever I want, whenever I want. Like, we're sort of conditioned to a sense of silos or gardens, or, you know, this can only exist here, or this content's only available there. So I guess this, you know, too much of a purist view about it might be unrealistic, but the element of particular silos, or, you know, privacy concerns really restricting the sharing of data, that part is going to be a challenge. But I think that's where brands will probably have the power, the sway, and the data themselves to be able to try to kind of piece together what is that real picture of their consumer journey look like, and how do they then work with the media owners on, like, a one by one basis to resolve those issues. So I guess we sort of have to redo things, you know, but I do think that, like, programmatic definitely offered some of its promises. I think when you're switching into these new formats and these new, the fragmentation that you get across devices and stuff, that's the problem everyone is hoping to solve.
Yeah. You know, your specialism is, of course, video and CTV. And when you're looking at across the European market, you know, we're seeing different, sort of a big variation in terms of the levels of adoption of CTV, the capabilities on both the buy and the sell side in different markets. But do you think there's a kind of unified common goal for the TV industry that they should all be working towards, you know, in order to sort of safeguard their future?
I think the way that I see some of it kind of happening, there seems to be a lot of conversations and collaborations amongst broadcasters. I think they're acutely aware of the infrastructure needs, the regulatory needs, and then, you know, the idea of the relationship with the audience. That's kind of the most important paramount thing. I think the landscape in Europe is definitely different than the US market. So they're definitely probably taking different approaches. But I have seen, like, collaborations, or say sales houses for broadcasters, where they sort of all work together to think about how to monetize in the new world. But the biggest thing that I think we have to keep in mind is that there isn't probably that one size fits all silver bullet solution. And that is probably the element of the common goal has to be around the consumer. So the viewer, as long as everyone's understanding, like, will this create a better user experience? Will this help ads, you know, flow and be relevant and help marketers kind of achieve outcomes and price points? I think those things they can get behind. And I know that there are, you know, industry organizations, and we're a part of several working groups kind of to try to help address those and speak to those needs. But in some ways, you know, like, versus the US, TV's not dead in Europe. And I think there's this element of some media owners and broadcasters are being more more progressive with data, and, you know, kind of having that as a feedback loop into their content. So I think they're probably going to be just fine, right? They're gonna make it. But it does seem like it's a tenuous thing, because you have audiences changing their habits, changing their time shift, and it is sort of upending this whole, you know, 50-plus-year industry that we all know and love and refer to as the, you know, $70-plus billion industry in America, and more than that globally.
Yeah, I think what you said about the user is particularly interesting I think there's a challenge there when they're going up against SVOD as competition for user attention. But I feel like we don't speak about, you know, user-centric ad-funded CTV enough. And that should be, you know, what is the optimal ad load? You know, do you, for me, a massive deterrent is, you know, the pre-roll ads. You know, if I know I'm going to watch 2 minutes of ads at the beginning of a show, it's a massive deterrent for me to even sort of switch over to use that app. If I feel like I'm going to get away with the pre-roll, I can handle, they can easily sneak some ads in later on and I'll find myself passively consuming them.
Are you a person that goes to the theater 15 minutes so they can miss the ads?
I'm not actually, no. I can handle them in the cinema, funnily enough. But there is something about when I'm in those environments. It's when I've got a choice of an ad-free option. I think that's it. But I feel like it's something that we should be talking about more, is how to make advertising more palatable to the user. And the short formats should be something that we spend a lot more time talking about.
I think that the idea is the relevancy, right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where what programmatic got behind, was that it's not that people unequivocally hate ads. You know, they hate things that are not useful, informative. Like, I have found that the ad experience on certain platforms that's based off of listening to what I say is serving me extremely relevant ads. And it's sort of sidestepping the search. Like, I don't have to like actually search for something. I'm actually getting the ad before I need to search because of the ambient listening. So I think there's some interesting ways that advertising is going to be a part of our lives that maybe just weren't possible before. And yeah, the relevancy and the idea of ad load, I know for sure that that's pretty much one of the major concerns any broadcaster or media owner is going to have, is their audience's, you know, experience. So they definitely will find that magic number, that sweet spot, and that to keep the people engaged.
Yeah. So it's always very easy for people like me to be critical and to say that, you know, they should be doing this, they should be doing that. However, in reality, all sort of commercial broadcasters and CTV publishers, you know, they often have various challenges they're facing. So what do you think, what are the sort of headwinds and the challenges that you think the European CTV markets are facing? You know, what's sort of stopping them from moving on more speedily with CTV?
I think the users have not really had the same sort of market traction, I guess, that has been seen in the US. So there isn't this plethora of, you know, streaming apps, services, and different device usage. Like, there's a lot of live and linear television that's active. So it's sort of like, what's the incentive for, you know, that market to boom? Or, you know, who's incentivized to kind of create those opportunities? I think that's definitely something that's still a bit of a question mark. This is exactly how that will flourish. But the fragmentation, kind of the different, you know, geographies and languages, and you know, say the way the footprints of content have been over years, you know, some things are syndicated from the US or licensed for multiple years. So I think it's just, I kind of refer to, there's a bit of a math problem in general. Like, we're trying to solve a math problem. You have basically same amount, like, while viewership has declined in certain ways, ultimately, like, the overall behaviors are kind of the same. Like, people are maybe enjoying more social media and in more kind of like non-traditional video consumption, but at the end of the day, people are still watching, you know, 4 hours of television in many markets. So I think the thing that's good to remember is just, it's a moving target, and the math problem is kind of this question of the operational costs of more digitized television. Where does that get shared? You know, just
it seems like broadcasters are sort of being asked to maintain two businesses, you know, a digital one and a linear one. And that cannot be easy to solve for, right? Or to plan for. So I think that that's kind of where it feels like more planning and more support and more kind of the coalition collaboration stuff to kind of mitigate the risks of any one party kind of trying to transform an industry.
And do you think they're going far enough in terms of changing? You know, I think sometimes, you know, you hear announcements, you know, about programmatic or data, and then, you know, you speak to buyers and they sort of say, oh, it's kind of hard to get hold of anyone to set up that targeted campaign, or sometimes it's prohibitively expensive. So there's sort of like programmatic virtue signaling is kind of going on through press releases. But you know, do you think the European TV industry is doing enough to, you know, properly safeguard its future?
I mean, that's what time will tell. It's hard to know now if they're doing enough. History is written by the victors. So I think there's probably, like we were mentioning about incentives, like there's probably more that could be done as long as certain people are going to be, you know, impacted, right? So as far as keeping things status quo or understanding exactly where that tipping point is, I'm sure that they are acutely aware probably of when that will be. I think there's the challenge or the caution I have is that there's sometimes that sense of like programmatic or tech to be like, we will save and solve everything and we know better than you. And I think that kind of dynamic is probably not productive. So it's hard to totally understand exactly, you know, what could be done. I think there does seem to be a willingness. There are people, you know, participating, exploring, you know, figuring out what their PG strategy is going to be. But I guess I joke that like TV thinks it's moving at record pace and digital thinks that TV's moving at snail's pace. So I think the perspectives on how quickly things change are definitely different. Because to me, you know, television's got to build for what the next 50 years looks like if they've kind of had this dominant reign the last 50 years. And I don't think that happens overnight. So I would like to see them doing more.
What about the creative side? I mean, one of the things, it's turning into a bit of an issue for me that, and I'm sort of speaking to everyone about this lately, but my problem is that I don't really feel like I'm seeing anything different creatively when it comes to you know, to technological bells and whistles or interesting new formats. I know these things exist, but I don't see them being used. And do you think we're getting
They're
the
not
best?
Common.
No. I think it's quite rare, and there probably are reasons for that. You know, in terms of implementation, all the rest of it. But do you feel like we're getting the best of the technology that is at our disposal, or is that something we'll come in time when we see more scale?
I think creative is pretty much one of the last things to benefit from advancements. You know, the cost of producing a television commercial is already just so high, or there can be such a barrier of entry to that can really sort of stall the idea of doing anything more fancy. So, you know, if it takes X dollars to create, you know, a couple of mass market ads, and now you're saying, well, now I would love to drill in and just make, you know, a small cluster for the left-handed soccer mom, right? Like, that's not very easy for a brand to also take on that cost. And, you know, without that kind of the full journey, the full outcomes, like without being able to totally get that full picture of what the extra work and extra cost will benefit them, or tech bringing in ways to reduce that cost. You know, if editing, you know, the creatives and, you know, getting them to be fit to the delivery points was smoother and easier, then that would be great. We've talked a bunch with Peach, and I think there's a lot about the idea that a media plan doesn't always consider the spec of the endpoint. So it, you know, a major brand might say, you're going to have to go with lowest common denominator creative. And that unknowingly could kind of cut out 20% of an audience they want to reach because certain audiences might only be found on more niche sites. So I think there's a lot more that can be done in combining interesting storytelling of ads with the, you know, the delivery and kind of more, you know, addressable targeting to make a better user experience. I think that the publishers and media owners really want better user and viewer experiences. So they'll find a way towards it, but I have not found creative to be the first place that gets optimized always.
Yeah, it felt like something that we did a lot early in digital when my favorite example, and I was speaking to people about this on Twitter, was, you know, the Hulk smashing your screen. And I sort of came to the conclusion that largely what I'm talking about is I want to see my screen smashed more often. But there was a feeling that you would, you know, go on a site and you would just have that sit up moment where, and it was such a heavy, intense brand impact. And nowadays it seems like mostly like outdoor advertising is where I kind of see that high impact thing that really makes you sit up and take notice. I just feel like
Did you see the ad where the spaceship comes out? I think it was in Australia. The spaceship comes out from the side of the building.
I did. 3D. That was amazing. That was absolutely spectacular. And I feel like we should be seeing a little bit more of this online, you know, and on TV. I think when you've got that big screen, that there's probably opportunities to be doing far more interesting stuff. I'm not sure whether it's going to be, you know, one of the things we're talking about at the moment is things like playable ads where, you know, you can sort of have a game. I mean, they already exist, you know, on mobile, but what we're sort of interested in sort of looking at is whether we'll see more advanced versions that can probably or sort of really drag you into a sort of truly immersive experience on your TV through cloud streamed games. It's not fully there yet, but I just feel like we should be doing more to sort of engage people. I think there's, like I said, a huge opportunity for brands who actually do get in and leverage the technology properly to really stand out. It's not just have another 30-second pre-roll that, you know, people sort of pass by. So let's just go back to that question of the consumer. You know, what's the role, what are the roles and what are the responsibilities of the industry towards consumer, you know, at the platform level, at the broadcaster level? You know, are we doing enough to, you know, meet the needs of consumer and you know, when it comes to everything from respecting their privacy to everything else?
I think that the consumer is definitely the heart and the focus of probably any progressive and forward-thinking company right now. So the advertising powering a world on demand, that's kind of the recent thought or trend in terms of, you know, how do you get all of this content and, you know, how do people sort of not have subscription fatigue or kind of cap out? Or what if they have to subscription hop because the show they want is only available on this platform for a short period of time, but then everything else they watch is on another one? I think that that element of the consumer sort of not caring where a show or a piece of content they want to watch is at, that sort of just lines itself up for an ad-supported model in my mind. So the thing that's interesting is, say, probably the linear world has a lot of old ways of doing things that aren't very transparent to like the everyday person. And that's what's going to be interesting as you really shift to the consumer focused model where, you know, now to win the attention and win the eyeballs, you're going to have to bring the content that people are seeking and wanting. And that is kind of a new power shift. I think that that's what we'll kind of be curious to see how it plays out. And the responsibilities, you know, people just want to be able to, like, TV is good for, you know, episodic content. It's good for like companion washing, like while you're just doing the dishes, you know, have something on. Like, there's sort of different modes that people use television for. And I think that that's a bit of something that people, like, that brands will consider as well. So it's sort of, you have people that are going for long form episodic content. And so they're in a different mindset. And that might actually benefit some brands more than others. And then you have kind of the, you know, I think some of the interns we were talking with, like, they use YouTube to mindlessly kind of watch, like, low commitment, like, no strong story arcs they have to pay attention to, and it's just sort of on. And that's definitely a kind of a different intention and ilk than, say, you know, HBO.
Yeah. What you said about the consumption pattern, somebody was talking about this on Twitter recently, where they were talking about how Emily in Paris was the type of content where you're not necessarily supposed to be invested in watching it, and that it was a little bit like Friends, and that it was something that was on, but you could easily take the dog out and not be paying sort of full attention to it and come back to it and still be able to engage with the story. And that, that was a light bulb moment for me, because there's certain types of TV that I can't comprehend why anyone would watch it. And when I watch something, I tend to go into, it's something I really want to watch, and I sort of will commit to watching it, and I'm invested in it. But yeah, that thing of passive TV viewing is actually quite a huge thing, apparently. And one of the things that linear TV, I suppose, has lent itself to, in that you just stick it on and it's just on the background. So the digital world is going through.
I just have to say, Friends is the one that cracks me up. Like, that show was around when I was growing up, and it has such staying power. It's like number 12 on Barb's, you know, list of TV shows, and it's the only one that's a streaming one. So it's a really, it does speak to this element. And what I guess I like as well about TV kind of being more the social medium is there's just this element of television that's sort of different than, you know, when you're browsing on your mobile or when you're doing something on your desktop. Like, the just television just has this sort of special spot. And I think that's what's kind of curious to see as it becomes more digitized and, you know, hopefully programmatic and relevant ads. Like, it just has more opportunity for us to kind of, like, really think about ourselves, right? Like, you know, like you're saying, that there are different types of watchers, like, you know, really looking at ourselves and like, well, what do we use this for, or that for, or what resonates with us? Like, that's probably one of my tropes that I say is that a lot of times programmatic skews towards sort of dehumanizing the whole ad experience. You know, it's cookies, it's bits and bobs, it's, you know, impressions, but it's in television, you have a much better chance of sort of engaging that viewer and kind of telling that story. So it's hopefully going to make advertising more like, you know, a creative upswing too, you know, kind of put more emphasis on, you know, there's a famous book, like, When Advertising Tried Harder, I think is the name of it. And it's pretty much about, like, the 60s when, you know, the golden age of advertising. And I think that's, people also kind of say, like, the golden age of television and when episodic content got its rebirth in the last, I guess, three times that existed. There's probably also this kind of pending golden age of advertising based on what you can do with these new tools.
Yeah, I think there should be. It's something that, yeah, I think we've been sort of waiting for. And I think we've done a great job on the pipes and the data and all the rest of it, as well as solving a lot of the problems that came in the early days. But yeah, I feel like the creative phase is something that, yeah, we should really see a golden age in interesting formats. Yeah, I just hope that there's more appetite out there to invest in these things. Probably the job of the industry as a whole to work together and collaborate to make these things happen. So the digital world is going through a major transition phase, particularly around identity. That we were seeing the decline of the cookie, we're seeing GDPR regulations sort of closing in, tightening up and becoming ever more specific. Then we both know that cookies aren't really used on CTV, even though technically you could be using them on a browser, but they're not really used. But what do you think the net effect is going to be on the CTV advertising world? You know, is it going to be a benefit as we see, you know, a flight to context, or what impact will it have?
I mean, I think it's context is king is another nice full circle. I think the idea that the television shows have been a proxy for the audience demographic for ever. So I think that part's pretty comfortable. So as the idea of, you know, we were talking before about, you know, if you want to get better ads, you kind of have to have better targeting as well. So if companies are doing kind of matching their data, so you have a buyer using an InfoSum and matching data with several broadcasters, and then they have that ability to now take a custom message or an exciting kind of creative and be delivering it to exactly who they, you know, think they're delivering it to. So that part will be interesting. There's probably going to be, you know, a symphonic kind of effect of all of this stuff. It's not just the cookie going away. It's not just GDPR. It's not just audiences like going more and more into nonlinear experiences of television. I think all of these things together sort of create this element where we're knowing what we maybe knew, like going back to the future. So television works. It's, you know, highly engaging, long form episodic content, you know, is got better brand recall, better exposure, and just stronger resiliency and efficiency for ad spend. So I think that's that element of just sort of the transformation. There are just several layers to it. So I do think that people will be spending more and more on CTV. We've seen huge upticks just in the last, you know, 9 months, like COVID or no COVID, we would have seen strong kind of growth, I'm sure. But I do think there's this extra element of people are forced to be indoors more or to, you know, have limited social engagements now. So many people have said like the TV is bringing them together. It's having a nice spot in family time. So there's pretty much, you know, only more opportunity, it seems, in CTV. It probably just sped up a bit due to the pandemic.
Yeah, I like the way you use the word symphonic. But you're right. Yeah, if we're going to talk about convergence, there are all these sort of positive forces working to the advantage of CTV at the moment. And yeah, it does feel like a genuinely a very exciting time. I don't think we're overstating things too much by saying that. Austin, it's been an absolute joy. We'll have to have you back on the podcast another time, and yeah, all the best.
Lovely being here. Thanks for having me.